Attorney General Barr has announced that a head prosecutor is stepping down.
Only problem is that the prosecutor disagrees. He says, I have not resigned and have no intention of resigning.
I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro, and this is Up First from NPR News.
The man in question, Jeffrey Berman, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York.
Among many other things, he's been investigating the president's personal attorneys, first Michael Cohen and now Rudy Giuliani. More on that in a moment.
Also, scientists are testing a new COVID therapy. We have the latest on antibody research.
And we're going to look to Latin America, which is being hit hard by the virus.
So stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your weekend.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Podsites, a leading podcast attribution platform for podcasters and advertisers. Join hundreds of household names you hear every day, like HubSpot and Policy Genius, that are gaining real-time marketing intelligence from Podsites. Their goal is to make marketers like you look like advertising superstars. Learn more at podsites.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Facebook. It's a challenging time for small businesses across the country. Facebook's Business Resource Hub offers free tools to help manage your business and support customers and employees. Learn more at facebook.com/resource.
The announcement came in a Friday night press release. The Attorney General wrote, I thank Jeffrey Berman, who's stepping down after 2.5 years of service as United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York.
That was followed by another press release from Berman. Nope, he's not stepping down, and he's pressing ahead with investigations that will, quote, move forward without delay or interruption.
Let's turn now to NPR Justice Correspondent Ryan Lucas. Without delay or interruption, thanks for being with us, Ryan.
My pleasure.
Well, this was an extraordinary back and forth. What happened?
This really is a remarkable situation. This was an abrupt decision announced late on a Friday night, which, of course, only adds to the jarring nature of it and only raises more questions about what's going on. But as for how it went down, the Justice Department put out its statement after 9 p.m. Saying Berman was stepping down and announcing that the president intends to nominate Jay Clayton as his successor. Clayton is the chairman of the Security and Exchange Commission. His nomination struck some former federal prosecutors in New York that I spoke with as odd because he's not a litigator and he's not a prosecutor. A few hours later, Berman put out his own statement saying, nope, he didn't resign. He has no plans to resign until a presidentially appointed nominee is confirmed by the Senate. And Berman pointed out that he himself was appointed as U.S. attorney by the District Court for the Southern District of New York. This puts us in an extraordinary situation where the Justice Department is in a very public dispute with one of its most prestigious and busy U.S. attorney's offices. And it again raises questions about the management of the Justice Department under Attorney General Bill Barr's watch.
Mm. Tell us more, please, about Jeffrey Berman. He was at one point in the same law firm as Rudy Giuliani.
He was. Berman was appointed acting U.S. attorney back in early 2018 by the Trump administration. As I said, the District Court for the Southern District of New York then appointed him U.S. attorney later that year since there was no Senate-confirmed position. Originally, there were questions about how independent Berman would be as a U.S. attorney. As it turns out, he has been very independent. An early indication of that was the case that his office brought against the president's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen. That case infuriated the president, who at the time of an FBI raid on Cohen's office and residences lashed out about that raid. Cohen ultimately, of course, pleaded guilty to financial crimes, to lying to Congress, and campaign finance crimes. And under oath in court, Cohen implicated Trump in payments made by two women ahead of the 2016 elections to keep them quiet about affairs that they said that they had had with Trump. Berman's office has had other high-profile investigations that it's been working on for a while now under his watch as well.
And he says they'll go forward. What do you think they mean specifically?
Well, he did not specify in his statement what specific investigations he was referring to, but one particularly notable investigation that the office is conducting right now is an investigation into the president's current personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Two associates of Giuliani's were charged in October for alleged campaign finance violations. Those are Lev Parnas and Igor Fruman. Investigators appear to be scrutinizing a range of Giuliani's activities, including his foreign lobbying work, as well as a couple of other issues. Giuliani denies any wrongdoing. He has not been charged at this point, but this is certainly something that people are going to be paying very close attention to going forward to see how that investigation plays out.
NPR Justice Correspondent Ryan Lucas, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And for more from the White House and the campaign, check out the NPR Politics podcast.
A medical therapy that's been used for more than a century is being tried to treat patients with COVID-19.
It involves taking plasma from COVID patients who have recovered and giving it to patients who still have the disease.
That's called convalescent plasma, and NPR science correspondent Joe Palca joins us. Joe, thanks for being with us.
You bet.
So everything old is new again. Tell us, please, about how plasma factors into this pandemic.
Well, patients who get a disease like COVID-19, a viral disease, and survive, have made antibodies. Their immune systems have made antibodies to this particular invading organism. And presumably, the antibodies stick around for a while, and it's in the plasma of their blood. So presumably, if you take that plasma and give it to someone who's sick at the time, those antibodies might be helpful in making the sick person well.
And from what has been seen so far, does it seem to work?
Yeah, it's been done in tens of thousands of people now for COVID, and the answer is, yeah, kinda, sorta, maybe. It's not a miracle cure where you can, you know, leap out of bed and say everything's fine. At the same time, it has helped reduce mortality, it seems, and it is safe to use. That's been the main objection. Some people said, oh, well, this might cause more problems than it actually solves, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So it is being used quite widely, and there are some studies that will be showing whether it's actually effective or not.
Based on my vast medical knowledge, if there are antibodies in convalescent plasma that are helpful to patients, couldn't you just give them antibodies instead of a transfusion?
Well, Professor Dr. Simon, that's true. You could do that. In fact, that's what people do. They concentrate these antibodies into something which is called hyperimmune globulin, which is a package of the proteins that are the antibodies that you could actually directly inject into people. And this has the advantage of your being able to somewhat better characterize what's in the soup. I mean, if you just give someone plasma, you don't know exactly what you're giving them. In the hyperimmune globulin, you have a better sense of exactly what's going on.
Are these antibodies available only from someone who's recovered from COVID-19, or is there a way to make them?
Well, interestingly enough, you can make them from a non-human. There's a company in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, that is using cows. These are special cows, I should say. They are cows that have been given a human-like immune system. And if you inject them with what amounts to a COVID vaccine, it's not the virus itself, but things in the virus that cause an immune response, these cows will churn out buckets of antibodies in their plasma, which can then be used to concentrate and turned into a therapy. There's another company that's using horses to do something similar. And this has actually been used in the past also, using horses to generate vaccines or therapies for certain infectious agents.
Any time frame in which some of these newer antibody therapies might be available for COVID patients?
Well, the cow-based ones are supposed to be going into human trials soon. There's other ones that are coming along. They're even more specifically targeted. These are single antibodies that have been purified and grown, or sometimes antibodies in a cocktail of two. These are coming along. They're about to be tested in humans pretty soon, and scientists are pretty enthusiastic about their potential.
NPR science correspondent Joe Palca, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
The United States still leads the world in the number of known coronavirus infections, but the global epicenter of this pandemic has moved south.
To Latin America, Brazil is number two in terms of case numbers, and Chile, with a population of just 18 million, is now also in the top 10.
And while the virus is claiming lives, it's also roiling governments. We're joined now by NPR South America correspondent Phil Reeves. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
Let's start with Chile, because we haven't heard as much news from there. What is the latest?
Yeah, Chile has not got that much attention, but the fact is it's got more confirmed coronavirus cases per capita than almost any other country. So the government's making a fresh effort to try to combat that. It's tightening up the rules in the capital, Santiago. When the people who are under lockdown there want to go out shopping, they go online and get a permit from the cops. Now they can only do that twice a week instead of five times. And there are also some tougher penalties being introduced for violators. But, you know, there's other other worrying stuff going on there, Lulu, as well. I mean, copper mining, as you know, plays a big, big role in Chile's economy. Now, the unions are warning of an explosion of cases in the mines. In a couple of cities in the mining region in the north, officials have reportedly ordered refrigerated storage trucks because they're worried about morgues running out of space.
How are people there reacting, Phil? Because before the virus, there were months of unrest with anti-government protests, some of them violent.
Yes, indeed. And those were big protests. I mean, last year, President Sebastián Piñera was facing a major uprising over social inequality. And that was still simmering away when the pandemic started. It has now died down, although there were some protests in Santiago in May. But the tensions, I think, the underlying tensions, they're still there. People are terribly worried about the economy. Like everywhere, it's in a nosedive. Piñera's ratings were at rock bottom before the pandemic arrived. They have sneaked up a little, but he's still unpopular. And a lot of Chileans are criticizing him for his handling of the pandemic.
So let's turn to Brazil now, where the political situation is really fraught, as you've been reporting for quite some time. The president there, Jair Bolsonaro, has consistently played down the threat from the virus, but cases are surging.
Yeah, the number of confirmed cases in Brazil has just gone over 1 million. There have also been nearly 50,000 deaths. And experts say the virus hasn't yet peaked in Brazil. So Bolsonaro's in an increasingly precarious position. He's lost two health ministers in as many months. He's fired one and the other quit. Now he has an army general doing that job as a stand-in. Bolsonaro disputes the case numbers, saying they're inflated by state and municipal officials to get more federal dollars. He's even urged his followers to go into hospitals, public hospitals, with cameras and check whether the intensive care beds are full, which is, of course, a crime. Doctors and scientists are furious. Yeah, they say that just spreads the virus. And they're not happy because while this is going on, a lot of towns and cities are opening up their economy. Meanwhile, Bolsonaro is facing a political crisis, a showdown with the judiciary, which is setting off a lot of alarm bells because he's been talking of ignoring Supreme Court orders if he deems them to be absurd or politicized. And on top of that, there are scandals swirling increasingly around his inner circle and his sons, some of whom are under police investigation for alleged crimes.
And this is the region's biggest economy, of course, so it's incredibly important what's happening there. What is going on in the wider region? What are you seeing?
Well, Peru is having a very rough time. It locked down hard and early, yet it has one of the highest infection rates in South America. Medical professionals there were out protesting on the streets of Lima, the capital, this week, demanding protective equipment. There was also a standoff in that city after riot police arrived to try to clear the streets of street vendors. These kind of tensions seem certain to get worse as the economy tanks. Peru's central bank says it's seeing the biggest drop in GDP in a century. Meanwhile, in Argentina, it's a sort of different story. It still has some of the lowest numbers in the region, under 1,000 deaths, but there's a growing problem in the greater Buenos Aires area. The government had been loosening the lockdown, but it's having to tighten stuff up again in some places. And the president, Alberto Fernandez, has been told by his doctors to stay in his palace in order to avoid getting infected.
That's NPR South America correspondent Phil Reeves with the latest. Thank you so much, Phil.
You're welcome.
And that's Up First for Saturday, June 20th, 2020. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Up First is back Monday with news to start your week. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And be sure to check out a special episode of NPR's Code Switch. They've been checking in with one of the plaintiffs in the DACA case for a few years. Met up with her after she heard the news that the Supreme Court had ruled in her favor.
Hear what happened by downloading the latest Code Switch podcast. And for the latest news, interviews, and more, tune in to Weekend Edition, Saturday and Sunday mornings.
Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Hey y'all, I'm Sam Sanders, host of It's Been a Minute. There is a lot going on in the world. So on my show, my guest and I make sense of the news and culture through conversation. It feels like we're living in three movies at once.
That's a good way to put it.
It feels like a Mike Judge movie, it feels like a Spike Lee movie, and it feels like a Michael Bay movie. Like
every Tuesday and Friday, listen and subscribe now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Babbel. If learning a language is on your to-do list, Babbel makes it fun and easy to start. Right now, Babbel is offering listeners 3 months free with a purchase of a 3-month subscription at babbel.com, promo code FIRST.